All right, good evening, everybody. I will call us to order for the public meeting in our capacity serving as Drainage District Trustees for Richland Drainage District number 20. And the first item on our agenda is presentation of the preliminary engineering report for Drainage District Richland 20. And Ken, I would just ask, as you present the report, please start with how we got to this point, where the concerns came from, and how we got to here.
Sure.
All right, if I stand, I feel more comfortable speaking from my feet, I guess. Welcome, everybody. Glad you take time to come to this tonight. Again, this is the public hearing for the engineer's report on Drainage District number 20, Richland Township. As Rick alluded to, there was some concerns for of the tile in DD20. We have a report. Could you bring up the plat? Mm-hmm. Start with that. Drainage District number 20 has a west branch and an east branch. A little hard to see, but there's the west branch and the east branch. There was issues with the tile that crosses under the Union Pacific Railroad. The Union Pacific runs generally straight north and south. There's some obvious issues with that. The tile was plugged, failed. Okay, so that Lana brought that to the attention of the board. The board, seeing that the cost of that repair were going to be greater than $50,000, requires that a report be prepared and a hearing held with the landowners of the district. Okay, so that's what brought our investigation. They then hired us as the engineer to prepare this report. We investigated those issues underneath that tile and also found that there are issues downstream of that western branch as well. That tile has water that's flowed over the top of it, eroded over the top of that tile, and actually has washed out the lower section. It has gone into and flowed, surface water has flowed into the embankment of the open ditch. And I'll get into a lot of this more, but more later. But that's generally what we were looking at for generally the west fork of the tile of the DD20. We looked at the capacities of these tiles. While we were at it, we had all the information. We had the plat, the original profiles of the district, so we used that information to determine the existing capacities. We also looked at annexation. Those areas in red on the map are those areas that drain to the facilities but are not being assessed for the cost of the facility in northern maintenance. So they are outside of the existing assessment boundary. With those areas, classification of those areas that are proposed to be annexed would be necessary. Also, we looked at reclassification. This district is being assessed on one schedule. Obviously, that's a problem when you have two branches. People on the east branch are paying for work that's being done on the west branch, but yet receiving no benefit from that facilities. So there was one original schedule done in 1910 that is not up to today's standards, and I recommend that being redone. But those are all different things that we've looked into that I'll get into a little bit more. Again, Drainage District 20 is northeast of the city of Nevada. There are 3,236 acres within the watershed boundary, which is our red line, and includes those areas in red. The areas not included in red are the ones that are being currently assessed, and that's about 3,038 acres. So there's roughly 200 acres that would need to be annexed in. Again, there's the two watersheds with the west tile and east fork tile. This drains 20 drains into East Indian Creek, into Indian Creek, then into the South Skunk River, to the Skunk River, and then eventually to the Mississippi River. This district was established in, was first petitioned for in 1909, so it's over 100 years old. Subdrainage district number 20A in the area of Fernald, there's a sub-district up there that was established in 1937. So that's a little bit newer. We actually did a survey and investigation of that area of the West Fork from the west side of the railroad tracks down to the outlet and to the road crossing there. We also used LIDAR data in areas outside of that and combined that with our information to come up with cross sections and profiles of these areas for our report. Again, that LIDAR data was used to determine these watershed boundaries. That, along with a water or hydraulic model that determines flow paths of the water and very accurately determines what areas go to the outlet. Again, we found that the tile was failed on the west side of the railroad right-of-way and continuing underneath the railroad right-of-way. It's not functioning and certainly causes poor drainage upstream of that because of that. Erosion has again occurred over the top of the tile downstream. There's a lot of sediment along the surface culverts underneath the railroad. You can see some of that sediment in that top picture there. You can see some of the erosion outside of those culverts. And again, I don't know that we have a picture of that, but the outlet of the tile was actually washed out. And the existing open ditch has extended itself because of that. It's also there. You see where the open ditch is encroaching into the embankment of the railroad, causing some potential problems there. And we're recommending that open ditch be moved away from that railroad berm. We looked at capacities of the tile. The open ditch actually has an 8-foot bottom and a 2-to-1 side slopes. Thought would fit what is existing there. However, the tile itself is what controls the capacity of the system. We use the original plans and profiles to determine the capacity. However, the actual capacity could be much less of that, just from disjointed joints being moved, tiles being crushed, or who knows what's underground there, full of sediment. A lot of different things could occur that we don't know and couldn't have taken into account in our determination. But even with our determination, we found that generally the capacity of the existing tile systems are about a 1/8 inch coefficient. What that means is that tile is and was designed to carry away a 1/8 inch rainfall in 24 hours. If you had a 1-inch rain, it would take 8 days, theoretically, for that water to drain away with that existing tile system.
That's if it was operating as it was originally designed.
Absolutely. Unless there's other sediment or other issues with that tile, that, of course, would decrease that capacity even more. Okay, so it is undersized by today's standards, because today's standards are at least 3/8 inch coefficient if you have good surface drainage. Most tiles are today are designed for the 1/2 inch drainage coefficient. Some even go up to the 1 inch coefficient in areas that are very depressional, and they're really the only source of removing the water is through drainage tiles. So a lot of areas up in the northern part of the state have been going to the 1 inch drainage coefficient. But for this area, it seems to have relatively good surface drainage, so a 1/2 inch drainage coefficient would be my recommendation. District right-of-way, the records of this district do not show that the right-of-way for the open ditch was established, clearly defined in width. Obviously, to construct the original open ditch, they needed a right-of-way and paid damages for that right-of-way. However, it was not specifically defined in width. So the Code of Iowa in Chapter 468.126 says if the drainage records on file in the auditor's office for a particular district do not define specifically that land taken for right-of-way for drainage purposes, the board may at any time upon its own motion employ a land surveyor to make a survey and record and report of the district actually define the right-of-way taken for drainage purposes. Okay. In this report, we define the existing right-of-way as 80 feet wide. We've taken the top of slope of the existing open ditch as approximately an average of 40 feet wide. Okay. Then at the time during construction of the original ditch, they would have needed approximately 20 feet on each side for that. So we are assuming an existing right-of-way to be 80 feet, and we're establishing that with this report.
And that's just the existing open ditch portion?
That is the existing open ditch portion.
40 feet from the center of that ditch either direction?
Correct.
Okay.
Tile systems do not typically have a specific right-of-way. Their easement is established by the code itself and is given some leeway on what actually that is. It is whatever is necessary to do the work, to go in to repair or replace that tile. Open ditches are different, and that is specifically defined as a specific width. Those areas are taking one off the tax roll for property taxes. However, they are remain available for the farmer to use and farm up to the top of slope. There may be some buffer strips along this area that look like there were some CRP or waterways along this area. We didn't specifically know exactly what was there, but in any case, it's up to the landowner if there's work done that is going to be done in the areas of any CRP or any buffer zones, that the landowners talk to their county FSA office, Farm Service Agency, to get a waiver for the work to be performed. Typically, county committees typically give grant waivers for that work to be performed. A seeding of that is usually done by the landowner themselves after the project is complete. We will pay damages to those property owners. They get receipts for the work that was done, and the district will reimburse them for that. Just because there's a lot of specific different seeding arrangements that are done for that, with CRP or WRPs or any other waterways that we aren't really that up on that the County Conservation Service would know more about and what would be required there. Jurisdictional wetlands. Reading a part of the federal regulations here of the USDA Farm Service Agency and NRCS, activities of a water resource district, drainage district, or similar entity will be attributed to all persons within the jurisdiction of the district or other entity who are assessed for the activities of the district or entity. Accordingly, where a person's wetland is converted due to the actions of the district or entity, the person shall be considered to have caused or permitted the drainage. What's this saying? Saying if work is done that the NRCS feels converts a wetland by the drainage district, it's the landowner's responsibility. Okay? So, it's very important for each landowner to get wetland determinations on their farms for any work that is considered an improvement. Okay? I've got three options here, and two are improvements. One is a repair. I'll get into more of that later. But if you do a repair, you're allowed. The drainage district is, of course, allowed to keep their facilities in good repair. And actually, the Board of Supervisors, as trustees, are required to, according to the code, they shall keep the facilities in good repair. Okay. And any wetlands, as long as it's not increasing the capacity or flows, that repair is not increasing the capacity or flows of the existing system, wetlands will not be affected. However, if there is an improvement that they feel has impacted wetlands in the area or in the watershed, the NRCS will need to and will take a look at that. There's other issues with the, I'm sure a lot of you have heard of the WOTUS, Rural Waters of the U.S. That goes into effect August 28th. There's a lot of questions on that. Where is that at? And I don't think, as we understand, the EPA has not even set the rules for what and how they would like things to be accomplished. So, at this point, that's where they're at. We don't know of any specific rules that we need to follow in that regard. However, the important thing to know at this point, wetland determinations are important, depending on what exactly the board approves tonight. Wetland determinations are always important in my mind. For anyone's farm, I think it's an important document to have on all of your land, just for tiling, general tiling purposes. Proposed work, again, as I mentioned, at a minimum, it's necessary to repair that West Fork tile segment that's plugged, obviously. That would be the very, very minimum. And repair that lower portion that's washed out. Repair the ditch, keep the ditch free of trees so it's draining freely. All that needs to be done. I've included an option for that repair of the West Fork system. It's called Option 1. Again, that includes cleaning of the open ditch, removing the trees, clearing the trees out of the ditch, bringing it to the original grade, replacing the tile underneath the railroad right-of-way with a new, it would actually be a steel casing pipe that would be used as the carrier pipe, and it would have to be jacked and bored underneath the railroad from right-of-way to right-of-way. I'm proposing a 42-inch tile that is certainly larger than what's there, but we figure a 42-inch is what would be necessary to bring the capacity to the half-inch drainage coefficient. But it would just be for that 100-foot length that's underneath the railroad. It would also, I thought it would be reasonable to bore the larger size that you may need in the future, you may want to use in the future, rather than a smaller size and then be undersized for something 10 years from now. If you don't do it now, then you may want to go to the bigger size. So that's why that's a 42-inch.
But Ken, that's still, even though you would be increasing, as you present this, increasing the size of the tile that goes under the railroad, that's still a repair?
I consider that still a repair because it's just a short length. You're restricted by the lower tile, but that's still a 24-inch.
Okay.
Excuse me. The existing tile is actually a 22-inch. But you're allowed to go to the next available size. They don't make 22-inch tile anymore. So it's specifically for reinforced concrete pipe tile, which is what I'm proposing. Again, the old tile would be removed and replaced downstream of that railroad right-of-way and to the outlet of where it would outlet into the open ditch. That portion would be a 24-inch.
You can bring up, there's a map that shows that option.
Right after the plat. There it shows repair. The blue line is repair of the open ditch. And then the purple is the 24-inch tile. And then you can see the red up on top is the 42-inch going to the from right-of-way to right-of-way. We also are cleaning a short section of the open ditch that goes to the east branch as well while we're down there and doing repairs. We thought that made sense to do that, too, as part of this repair option. Next, we're proposing another option, option two, which is called the West Fork Improvements. In this option, we are cleaning the lower portion of the existing open ditches, both to the East Fork and the West Fork. Then we're extending the open ditch and replacing the existing 22-inch tile with a proposed open ditch following and paralleling the right-of-way of the Union Pacific Railroad up to a point where it would cross the railroad with a culvert, an 84-inch corrugated metal pipe culvert at right angles. Or that would be a casing, if you're right. That would be a steel casing, not a CMP. Because that would have to be bored and pushed underneath the railroad. And then you would extend the ditch another approximately 100 feet or so, and then outlet the existing 22-inch tile into that open ditch at that point. As an improvement, once you get to the larger size pipe, 42-inch and larger, that's when an open ditch becomes more economical. Moving the dirt is cheaper than those larger pipes start to get quite expensive. I thought in this case, we're in an area that is not as obtrusive to an existing farm, where we're not cutting it up as much. It's in an area where there's some surface drainage already, Existing farmer might think otherwise, but my thoughts were that it would have less effect than in some situations that I've seen before. So I thought it was reasonable to propose an open ditch here. You get much larger capacities, of course. You can get a larger capacity than what a 42-inch would provide, and at a cheaper rate.
But it's still going to be dependent upon the 22 that we got above this, right?
Yes. Yes. The 22 would still be a restriction to those areas upstream.
Okay.
It would remove any restrictions in that 22-inch that is on the east side of the rail, currently on the east side of the railroad. So you can maybe look at... capacities of that 22-inch. Yeah, that first segment, it's about the same drainage coefficient as the second segment, so... as seeing if that lower portion was more restricted, and it is not much, 0.3%. So anyway,
to the right, sir. He's not trying to find a restroom.
Going on to. There would also be drop structures placed at the outlets of both the West Fork and the East Fork for those tiles as they drop into the open ditch, and any surface water that comes over the top of them, there would be bulkheads placed at those locations. Of course, there'd be surface drains, corrugated metal pipe surface drains, which bring the surface water because of the berms on each side. That would bring surface waters into the open ditch. Any existing tiles that are lateral tiles that are coming into there would be brought in with corrugated metal pipe extensions, about 20-foot long extensions on those tiles that would dump those tiles into the bottom of the open ditch. Then there would be seeding and fertilizing, and buffer seeding would be done by the landowners and reimbursed to them. Option three is the complete system improvements. Knowing that the whole system is undersized, we proposed improving all of the tiles, the open ditches, and everything to the half-inch drainage coefficient. All the existing tiles would be crushed in place, and they would be replaced to their recommended half-inch drainage coefficient. The open ditch portion would all remain the same. The West Fork, again, we would still extend that open ditch up to the railroad crossing. Okay. And that would include all the branches and laterals draining into those as well would be upsized to half inch drainage coefficient. Railroad right-of-way crossings. Chapter 468. The Iowa Code, Chapter 468, talks about responsibilities of the railroad. Okay. There was some lawsuits and some court cases here recently involving some other counties. I believe there was one with Calhoun County that said the For years, the right-of-way or the railroads had paid for the cost of tile crossings. And there was but then the railroad sued, and in Calhoun County they actually lost. But then there was another court case after that, I believe in Hardin County, where there was a lawsuit and the railroad won in the fact they were calling tiles were culverts up until this point, and they were now defining culverts as not tiles, where they weren't responsible for tiles. And at this point, they will not pay for tile repairs within the railroad right-of-way. Okay? However, culverts, they are responsible for. As I read the code, Chapter 468.11, in regards to payment for constructions or improvements, the cost of building, rebuilding, constructing, reconstructing, changing, or repairing, as the case may be, any culvert or bridge when such improvement is located at the place of the natural waterway or place provided by the railroad company for the flow of water, shall be borne by such railroad company without reimbursement therefore. What this says to me is that crossing underneath the railroad is a culvert or an open ditch that the district is proposing for an improvement to their system. To me, the railroad would have to pay for this cost.
Well, Ken, let's talk about that for just a second, because it seems to me that right now we clearly have a tile running under the railroad.
Correct.
Right? And I think you just said in the case with Hardin County, the railroad is not responsible for paying for the improvement or repair or anything of the tile.
That's true.
So it seems to me that that's what we're talking about here. Whether we go to a culvert or don't go to a culvert, we're talking about doing something with a tile. And then the whole conversation about the culvert, that may happen down the road, but in my mind, we ought to be talking about what's the right thing to do for this district. But we have a tile right now that we've got to repair.
Absolutely. So what we need to look at is what is best for the district. Do we do just the minimum repair when we can get an improvement for the same or less cost?
Is that the law that the tile or trains don't ever pay any money on undertakes like that?
As I understand it, the railroad will be responsible, much like Story County will be responsible for any roadway areas. The railroad will be responsible for their portion of what happens in the drainage district. But the question is, who has to pay for the repair of the tile that runs under the railroad? If it's the district, but the railroad would share in the cost, just like the other landowners.
Yes. The tile, they will definitely not share in the cost of any tile that is repaired or replaced or improved.
Okay. They don't have any benefit? The railroad doesn't have any benefit to work done in
there? There has been court cases that have defined and separated tile from culverts. Okay. So
they're saying the tile is man-made and it has nothing to do with the railroad being man-made.
It's underground and that and not natural water course.
Yeah.
Okay. However, culverts in the natural water course, which this would be, there are existing culverts there now. What we're doing is providing a ditch, an open ditch, as an improvement to the district. To build, rebuild, construct, reconstruct, change, or repair, as the case may be, in color in the district. In my mind, it's clear.
You don't work for the railroad.
But I don't work for the railroad. And I I'm not paying for that railroad cost.
Well, who could ever change that rule? I mean, the railroad's not going to vote to change it. And if they're the only vote, people that can vote on it, where'd you? I mean, I've lived with it.
Well, this wouldn't be changed. This wouldn't be changed by vote. It would likely be changed by lawsuit, if they would choose to fight it. And it's not clear. I'm sure it's easy for them to say we're not paying. We're not going to do that. It's easy for them to say that, and they may not. In that case, we could still assess them that cost, put that on their assessment, add it as a special assessment, that cost, if they don't, one, they are responsible to construct it. And with proper notice, they are supposed to be given 30 days to construct that crossing. Again, there's legal ways that this has to be done. They have to be notified to their legal person or whatever. I'm not sure on how that's all done, but they have to be properly notified, and they're given 30 days, and if it's not constructed by that time, according to the plans, our plans and specifications, then we can go in and construct that and then build in accordingly.
Would the culvert option, would the three existing culverts stay there, or would those be removed?
Those would likely be removed, because I propose that this would be in that same location as where that those culverts would be.
But deeper?
Deeper, at the bottom of the open ditch.
There's a huge amount of water that goes through there. There's 3-4 foot culverts on the road north of there, and the water comes through and comes over the road you're touching.
Okay.
You're asking a lot of that even more.
Well, and this was just a preliminary design, and we would look into that a little further, too. But
that surface water would slow down to 22 inches coming in the top.
Yeah, the surface water would likely come in either to the side where that tile is coming in or over top of it. There would be a normal depth of flow of that open ditch, and we would try to keep that that tile outlet above that normal depth of flow of that open ditch. So yeah, that's important to provide a free outlet to that tile.
Right now, the land on the west side of that railroad is absolute soup.
Is what?
Is absolute soup. You cannot drive down with a tractor or a caterpillar or anything. Supervisor was mentioning about at least preparing the tile and getting some of that water away before you build any big culverts and open ditches.
Before even.
Because you're going to be trying to build an open ditch in the soup. West side.
I guess the other.
I'd like to see you think the railroad is being part of it too. They get as much advantage as a farmer.
Yes. And they're an obstruction to drainage.
That's right.
And that's why the code was written this way, is because they are an obstruction to drainage, and the code of Iowa looks out for that and prevents them from causing that.
Well, original specifications can't. The land just west of the railroad, where right now the 22 feeds in and crosses, it was not intended to be soup, right? I mean, the original specifications would have had it where we were supposed to be moving that water under the railroad,
yes,
at a reasonable rate. Right. So let's figure out what that
least,
is.
At least the 1/8 inch.
Yes. Okay. And we're not even doing that right now.
Probably not. Well, I think there's some surface flow. They've outletted, daylighted that tile. Weren't they able to daylight that somewhere? It is actually blowing up.
Where the water table is for the surface.
It's blowing up and then flowing across by surface through those culverts of the railroad, right?
The water table there is above the soil.
Well, that any time you're dealing with a railroad, it's going to take time, is the bad thing.
Two crop seasons already.
Yeah.
Probably been 90 crop seasons.
But it's not happenstance that culvert was crushed underneath the railroad track, is
it? Who knows? I guess, again, this tile is 106 years old.
But it's crushed underneath the railroad track, not east of it or west of it.
Well, I think if it's my understanding, Gary, you can correct me, but didn't the railroad notice there was a stuck hole in the right of way from that tile being broken?
Yeah,
and they filled it. That's all. The railroad comes out and fills it with ballast rock. When they noticed that there was a hole in the right of way from a broken tile, they went out and filled it with ballast rock.
So it's blocked.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. So if you're going to put the culvert underneath the railroad. 84 or 42, whatever, that's going down to the same grade that the existing 22 is on right now. You'll be going down to that level.
Yeah, there's two options. The one is the repair option. For that one, we would put the 42-inch at a grade that would accommodate the 22-inch tile. Okay. For the option two, which is an improvement option, with the open ditch, in that one, we would put that much larger pipe, the 84-inch, at an elevation much lower than that that 22-inch, where we can get the 22-inch of free outlet.
So if we do that, though, how do we keep the railroad from not plugging the other three culverts to do that?
I expect that those three culverts wouldn't be needed then. It would be handled by the much larger. Yeah, I don't know what that half would be, but the whole watershed is 3,000 acres. I think this would probably be half of that.
If you had caught client plugged in, you'd take him up through the jail.
Why don't
we do the railroad then?
We'll deputize it. You go handle it.
I've been working on it for a long time.
Ken, help me. Make sure I understand. So right now, we've got the 22 feeding into the tile that runs under the railroad. We also have three culverts that are supposed to handle the surface drainage, but they're also handling now some of what's coming down the 22-inch tile that's not making it under the railroad.
Right.
Okay. We need to build something as part of this drainage district that can accommodate all the water that's coming down the 22 and some of the surface drainage that's currently running under the three culverts. Whether we can accommodate all of it or not, we've got to accommodate at least some of that.
And that would be the proposal for the open ditch.
Open ditch.
Okay. The open ditch you're talking on the east side of the track.
Yes.
And where the ditch is now, stopped.
Yeah, we generally follow that existing path along the east side. It kind of meanders into the embankment of the open ditch of the railroad now. And back, and there's a lot of trees on the lower portion, and all of that's a problem.
Bridge crossing down there too. Construction.
Pardon?
There's kind of a bridge construction down there too.
There's a bridge at the road. Yep, underneath the railroad at the lower portion and at the road.
It's up there by that tower.
A low water crossing or something.
Oh.
It needs to be picked up. What do you call it? Zero crossing.
Okay.
But up further, what I was talking about was thinking about, you were saying a 42-inch under there would be connecting to the 24-inch that's there now along that side. That was for repair.
That was for the repair.
So actually, you got a big volume of water trying to neck it down to the 24-inch?
Well, it's the 22-inch. Going to a 42-inch and then back to a 24. Well, it's just that 42-inch is going to, we're going to have to neck that down, but it's going to be That was placed there in anticipation of future improvements, okay, to those tiles.
So I would think those other three that are there now, you might want to leave and see what happens.
Well, in that case, in the repair option, we would leave those three culverts.
So you can extend those and put some fill back on the track.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay, in the repair option, where the tile would be repaired, we would leave those three existing culverts in, and that's their responsibility. The other tile would be Jack and Boy. You clear on those options I was talking about, what was being done? So if not, we can talk more later, but I wanted to keep moving through this a little bit more. There's just a little bit. Annexation, again, there would be a separate process for annexation. There would be a separate hearing. It clearly shows that 200 acres are benefited by the district facilities, but are not being assessed. My thought is they should be annexed into the district to help share in the cost of any future repairs or improvements. Again, the right-of-way needs, typically we've been going to a more uniform 100-foot wide right-of-way, and the district would purchase that right-of-way, that additional 20 feet from those landowners where that open ditch is at, or if the improvement option is chosen, it would buy the full right-of-way from those landowners and pay them for that land. For the additional 20 feet on that lower portion, they would be paid a reduced cost or reduced price due to the fact that when they still have beneficial use of that land, they're exempt from real estate taxes, but ultimately, that is decided by three right-of-way appraisers, two landowners in the district, plus myself as the engineer. That is, again, formally decided at another public hearing, much the same as this.
Two landowners not in the district. Is that right?
I'm sorry, yes, I misspoke. Two landowners not in the district. From the town.
Correct. From Story County, but do not own land
not
in this district.
Right.
Now to the interesting part, which is the estimate of cost. Option one, I apologize, it's hard to see, but we have the open ditch excavation, a lot of different surface drains, and we have the 24-inch pile, the concrete pipe that is jacked and bored underneath the railroad. We have some elbows, lateral tile connections, and everything else involved with that work for the repair option of about $404,000. You add in some construction-related damages. Again, landowners are paid damages for any crops that are destroyed on their property. For any future crop loss, which may occur because of disruption of the dirt on their property. Again, for any buffer seedings or those types of things that would be paid for at a completion hearing at the end and when the project is completed. We've estimated those around $5,000. Right-of-way acquisition around $3,000. Finance costs during the project, there are drainage warrants that are used to pay the not only the landowner but the engineer or anybody doing work for the district are paid typically with the drainage warrants. They're essentially a bond that the individuals hold and they earn interest until the district is able to levy and have funds in their account where they can then call those warrants and then pay that person cash. All the engineering services for reclassification, right-of-way, hearings, annexation, this engineer's report, bidding, inspection, staking during construction, other design development, construction administration, as well as any legal services, the publications, your notices, the mailings of all those notices, are those costs all about $180,000 to bring the total project cost for the repairs about $583,000. We've separated those out or tried to as best we could at this point between the West Fork and the East Fork. There is work being done on the East Fork as well as they need to help pay for this report. They need to help pay for some reclassification if that is proceeded with, as well as annexation. So they still have a cost, and the West Fork would be $256 average cost per acre versus $63 for the East Fork average per acre.
Underscore that again, because we get into trouble with this every time we do one of these. That is not what it's going to cost each landowner. That's the average, if you throw them all together, of what the cost per acre would be. There are going to be some landowners, depending on what we do, that are paying a lot more than this per acre, and some that are paying a lot less.
Some could pay 2 to 3 times that cost, average cost, depending on where your property is located and how much you benefit. Those that benefit more will pay the higher percentage cost.
And just so we're clear, we as the Story County Board of Supervisors pushed a couple years ago to try to get Iowa Drainage Law. Dave Dio is actually who presented the bill to try to get it down to where it was a true per acre cost for everybody in the district. That's not where we are. Be completely clear on that's not where we are. Those of you that are sitting closer to receiving more benefits, sitting closer to the facility or whatever reason, are going to pay a little higher percentage of that.
And that's a whole other story. Again, I can get into reclassification. I think we'll get into that maybe a little bit later here. Okay. On some of the factors that are used and how we do reclassification. It's an involved process, but we feel it is very fair. It's done throughout everybody in the district. And I'll just get into that more later, I guess. But looking then at option two, keep that number in mind. Option one was $583,000. Okay, that was for the repair. Option two, the bottom number, we'll go right down to the bottom number, $492,000. Option two for the improvement is actually cheaper. Okay. Why? Because this option assumes that the Union Pacific is responsible for those costs of boring underneath the railroad with that 84-inch culvert. That is a large cost, over $100,000 cost that the district doesn't have to pay. Is responsibility of the railroad. However, you are therefore still upgrading your system to the half-inch drainage coefficient in that lower portion. You're reducing the amount of 42-inch tile that has to be paid for because you're replacing that with an open ditch. You're still gaining the half-inch drainage coefficient, and you're improving the existing open ditch in the meantime as well.
So let me. My wife always tells me I'm pessimistic. So let's say the railroad says we're not paying this
$100,000, and we end up in court trying to force the railroad to pay this $100,000, how much of our good county attorney's time is it going to take? Or do we have to, would we end up having to hire outside counsel? If we have to hire outside counsel, does that get billed back to the district as part of this, as part of this repair? Because I just don't think the railroad's going to roll over and write a check for $100,000 to put that over the tracks. So.
That is a better question.
Well, I don't mind answering the question, certainly. I don't know if this is the right moment, because there are some other comments that I'd like
sure.
to make.
Yeah.
If you want the short version, sure, I'll be happy.
Yeah. And we want to come back to you when we get all the way through this so that we can get some of those questions answered. But at the end of the day, so I tend to be a little more optimistic. I look at this and I say, when I compare option one, which is a repair, and option two, which is an improvement, at the end of the day, it's basically the same cost, right? $592,000 versus
$491,000.
No, $583,000 for option one, and $592,000 roughly for option two, with $101,000 of that being
added to,
right. But it's roughly the same cost, and we hope that there's $100,000 that the railroad's going to be taking up. But at the end of the day, even if the railroad didn't pick it up and the district paid for it, it's still a wash.
Right. That's another way to look at it. Yeah.
You are in option one, there's probably no chance the railroad's going to pick it up, right?
By law.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's not even a question on option one.
No.
On option two, there's at least the chance of a question.
I wouldn't even ask.
Yeah,
I've always been asked already. I think you guys should send a letter. So, now the fun one. Option three is the full improvement. I can go into this in much more detail, or we can just look at the bottom.
Go to the bottom figure.
We have a bottom number of, that's the next page, actually. $3,765,000. So, yeah, that's expensive. But you look at it for the West Fork, it's not of them. I mean, it's $900 an acre versus the East Fork is a lot more because they don't have as many acres. So that's the bad deal. Huh? I suppose you're on the East Fork, right? But there'd have to be a lot of support for that, of course, because remonstrance would apply to improvements. Okay? Majority of the landowners, only 70% of the land object, an improvement would not be done.
When Ken gave us this report, I told him it was good that he had a sense of humor, that he could include option three.
But I thought it was my responsibility, and it didn't take long to provide that. We had a lot of the numbers, so I think it's important to look at that, particularly because you guys' system is quite undersized.
Question to the technical thing, but we have currently about 3-4 foot culverts under the railroad track, 3-4 foot culverts on the road to half mile north that are periodically swamped. Is that 84 like, square inch wise and getting water through? It's hard for me to see that an 84 inch culvert will carry as much water as 3-4 foot culverts.
It depends on a lot of different things. We could look at the cross-sectional area. And I'd have to sit down and figure that.
At least as much carrying capacity as is there now.
Right, right.
Otherwise, I'm going to have water ponding up in my fields.
And we don't want that.
On the west side of the track.
Right. And the culvert works where it develops head. Okay, and that's really what defines how a culvert works. It raises up to even above the top of the culvert. And then they flow. And you may have water ponding for a short, very short period of time, but it'll go away in a matter of hours, usually. OK?
okay? Depending on a lot of different things. But certainly we would make sure that its size...
I would call it an improvement if we had less capacity.
Correct.
After you're done, then you can wait to start.
Absolutely.
The option two that you're talking now, back to when I asked before about those three culverts, are you thinking about leaving those three there that are there now? Probably close to his property. In option two,
I don't see those being maintained. They would either be filled, but again, those are the railroad's culverts, and depending on who does the work here and how exactly this gets accomplished, that would be a decision for the railroad and on what they would do with those culverts. We are concerned with the ag drainage. They are concerned about the keeping their tracks in good shape and their tracks functioning so they don't get flooded. Okay. But there'd be a lot of coordination with the railroad. There'd be a lot of coordination with the railroad, and we would make certain, again, we would definitely go through this again in our final design. Again, this is just a preliminary design for them to get some comparison of cost so we can decide which option we would like chosen here today. And again, all these are just estimates. Again, a little bit more on reclassification. Again, the annexation would trigger a reclassification. The fact that we are on one schedule, to me, for a repair, you wouldn't have, the board is not required to do reclassification. If we would not do the annexation, if we would do the repair option, reclassification is not required. However, I still recommend reclassification be done because the existing schedule is one schedule. It is not equitable. It is not fair to the landowners of the district because you have multiple facilities. You have a west facility, you have an east facility, and you have all these tile laterals. Plus the fact that reclassification done at that time did not use our today's standards. They did not have LIDAR data. They only looked at wet ground. They did not take into account how much of the facility you use. Those at the lower portion pay much the same cost as those at the top of the district that use all of the facilities. Okay, so in that respect, the existing schedule is not fair and equitable, and I recommend reclassification. A little bit about reclassification.
Want me to do that one?
You can maybe do that. Besides the fact I'm getting tired, you know quite a bit about it as well.
Nick Fredrickson with ISG, worked with Kent Narrow going to office. I guess reclassification is just a way of distributing equitable benefits of the facility throughout the district so that every single parcel within the district is treated equally in comparison to its neighbor, based on the benefits that the facility provides. We use the method, can't hint it at, with LIDAR. It's the state flew the entire state of Iowa, the DNR did, to provide high accuracy elevation data. Utilizing that with soil maps, the elevation data, your proximity to the facility, the cost of the facility to get to you, all of these factors go in along with your area to figure out how much benefit are you receiving from the facility and how close you are to the facility. I guess how deep do you want to get into this, Ken?
I think I'd go into the factors.
Okay. There's a multitude of factors that we can use on it. Area is number one. How much area do you have within the district that is draining to that facility? Two is a wet factor. That's based on the soil types of the soil within your parcel of ground. Next would be proximity.
Proximity is the ratio of how far you are to the outlet, to the very bottom of the facility, to where your water enters the facility. If you are way up top, you're using all of the facility, but if you're outside of the end of the facility, it starts dropping and getting lower due to the fact you are not right at on top of the facility, of the district's facility.
Another way to explain that is if you're right on top of the main tile, you have better use of that. Somebody that's a distance away from that has to get their water to the main, either bilateral or private tile or some other means. So that it takes that into account. So they have a lower, anybody that's farther away has a lower proximity factor than somebody that is right on top. Yes?
To that end, some of this ground actually outlets in the road ditch above the facility and is coming across all the on a good chunk of it right on top of the facility, as you call it. And I guess I'm just trying to figure out if we're going to be looking at that, which, you know, I don't really know what I think yet. But when I look at this, I mean, we got basically a section of ground up north of even where the facility is that's outletting into this. And a lot of it's coming out on the surface. And that's what creates that crit that we got running out there today. And I guess, so, yeah, we have a lot of ground right on that facility. It's the water from up north that's just being blown out on top of the ground that's screwing a lot of that up. So that benefit should, I mean, it's not going to really change what happens on ours on top of that because the water's on top of it.
Well,
so I guess I'm trying to figure out where's the benefit going to be. I mean, you know, and granted, I mean, we don't know everything here, but I'm just trying to figure out. The equation may not even be right either, using it that way, when
that
water is being outletted to get into it.
Yeah, the flow of the water is taken into consideration through all of this. On it, we build a model and watch underground surface flow underground tile flow and surface flow through the whole thing, and that's taken into consideration when we construct our hydraulic model to help produce these factors. That proximity factor we're talking about here is just one of a multitude of factors that we utilize. Another one is a use factor. The use factor is based on the cost of the facility to bring it up through the facility. So when you're on the lower end, you have a larger facility. If you have, if you start with a larger tile, it's cost more per foot to install that tile. As you go up the facility, that factor changes because the cost per foot is lessened on the upper end of the facility there.
Well, what I'm saying is aren't those on the top end actually getting more use of the facility than those?
Yes.
To get the water on top of it?
Typically, those people at the top of the watershed that use much larger portion of the facility would have a higher use factor, obviously. Okay, but again, there's multiple factors that are multiplied times one another to come up with units of benefit. Okay, and the person with the highest units of benefit has 100% classification. Okay, you see on your current assessment schedule a class, possibly, I'm not sure how what they show here in this county, but the code reads that it's according, you compare everybody to the person who pays the most. And that person that pays the most has 100%. Somebody that has a 50% class is only paying half of the person that pays the most. So everything's relative to that person.
It's extremely difficult to explain reclassification without actually running through an entire project. You know, we've sat here and gone through it with the board previously, and every district is different. There's not one that is ever the same. I guess
there's situations that adjustments can be made.
Yes, and we do make adjustments according to what we're seeing out in the field and in the office on our hydraulic model.
We just went through a reclassification, our first one, in Marshall Story 1, and I'll just tell you all, I was really, really apprehensive about going, well, Kent, you know, from our early conversation, I was really apprehensive about going through it, and I found it to be a highly complex process, but ultimately a really, really fair process that really tries to take everything into consideration. And the biggest thing that I'd underscore is you're responsible for the water that falls on your property, not the water that flows into your property. The people that have the water falling on their property that flows onto yours, they're responsible for that. And I think the system that is used gets to that. I was highly impressed as we went through it. And I'll tell you, we had some people in Marshall's story that were really pleased with where it ended up, and some that absolutely were not pleased with where it ended up. But I don't think anybody would say that it wasn't a fair and equitable process how we got where we got.
That's true. We use GIS data. Everybody's treated the same. I mean, the same factors are used all across the board. We use the same methodology throughout the same watershed. So it's a very consistent, very repeatable process.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'd like to be clear, that my comments were, is I want to make sure that all the factors figure out what the benefit is that there's a lot of people that are getting a big benefit out of that, even though it might appear that we're always getting a benefit.
Absolutely, and then this is a set of numbers that are used to try and obtain, as best as we can, units of benefit, okay? There is really no system that's perfect that's going to take every possible thing into account, but without spending tens of thousands of dollars, you know, it is... We found it to be a very, very good system.
At the end of it, we'll prepare the maps and the assessment schedules and everything out. Ultimately, it's a set of two commissioners and the engineer that sits down and reviews the parcels that go through, and that ultimately puts a stamp on that this is fair and equitable throughout the district.
And that's filed with the board, and another hearing is held.
Hold on, Kent.
Not just giving hand signals, it's nothing secret.
No.
When you get back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't working.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to take a break,
let's take a five-minute recess, and we're going to come back, and we're going to hear comments, concerns, suggestions from landowners in Richland 20. We'll start that at 7:45.
Yeah, my wife, Daryl, her and Daryl are going to
at the boathouse for dinner. And I thought we'd be done at 7:30.
Oh, wow.
They were waiting on me. And I don't know how they got to go ahead. Ran pretty good, didn't it?
Oh, it was outstanding. Yeah, I like it. That's pretty wild.
Yeah,
I got about 19.
Oh, wow. You can't beat that.
No, I was using the high tag. That's the high.
Oh, yeah.
When I go to the PEA-5,
They actually tell you in that truck that I would get better mileage than I would get.
It wasn't even close. You run through the Appalachian Mountains. Oh, really? Kent, if you're out there, we'll have you come back in. Scott, are you recording?
Yes.
All right, we're back in. We are on item number 2 on our 5-by-5 item agenda. And item number 2 is hear comments, concerns, suggestions from landowners in Richland 20. Anybody wishing to do so, I think with our new microphones you can stay where you are, but we will try to keep it kind of orderly. Anybody wishing to make comments? Register concerns at this point. You will be given another opportunity. All right, we'll move on to present drainage issues in Drainage District 20A and possible repairs.
I'm not familiar with what's...
All right, Darren.
Yeah, Darren had asked that we include this just because the people in 20A are part of District 20 as well.
Okay.
Are they here?
There are some here.
There's some folks from Fernald. What the issue is, we did some repairs there a few years ago and opened the tiles up, and utility companies helped us remove a bunch of the trees in town. As you know, district tile and cities don't really work well together with all the trees and drainage issues that come with the town. There's one tree in particular at the end of this... the city street, the main north-south street in Fernald. That tree's close enough to the tile that it does clog the tile with roots occasionally. We've jetted it like That was 3 years ago. I think it was done like 5 years prior to that. And that last tree has not been removed. So I've been contacted by some landowners on what can we do with that tree. I see a few options. We can either come up with a jetting schedule, jet it every 3-5 years or so. That costs about $500 every time we have them come out and do that. We could, least favorable is probably wait until there's a problem and people get water in their basements, and then we go out and jet it. That's not very preferable. We could put a solid tile through that section, 50 to 100 foot long stretch. That would avoid the roots of that tree. That would probably be in the range of $2,000 to $3,000. And the board really doesn't, or the trustees don't really have a mechanism to bill that to a one property owner. It has to be spread throughout this sub-district. Those are really the main options to handle that.
How close is that tree to the tile?
Yeah, I'd say 15 to 20 feet. It's a very large tree, so it's close enough.
One tree that they took out already? It didn't affect, the roots didn't affect that tile. They took one tree out.
Yeah, it's very, very young. Yep, that helped. Correct. That really helped too, but then that one, we have one left, and there's some other trees further up, so this really isn't the only tree, but this one has to be right at the end, so anything that's affected there affects everybody in town.
What, have you heard anybody doing the tile, or running the trencher down across there? Is that the roots? When you cut the, when I was told, you take a trencher, you go in there and cut it down between the tile and the tree, and then you don't have to do nothing else but fill the dirt back in, and if the roots go ahead and start regrowing again, they'll turn and they'll go up that ditch where you cut. If they won't go into the hard dirt on the other side.
Haven't heard of that being done, and something to think about.
Mm-hmm. I thought that turned as far away from the tile.
It is right on like the 33-foot right-of-way line of the road, and then the tile's like right in between that and the road. So if it, it's definitely within the district. Well, like you said, tile doesn't necessarily have a right-of-way. It's just whatever's needed to make that tile perform. But it's, the tree's right on the edge of the road right-of-way, but it's a lot closer to the district tile.
Well, why can't you just take the tree down? If it's in the right way, why can't you just take it down? Maybe I don't have a basement anyway.
It's not in the road right away, and like you said, the tile doesn't necessarily have a width of right away, so it's taking a tree down in somebody's front yard is a sensitive topic.
Well, yeah, it's sensitive to my basement. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you're going to put, you said something about something that's going to cost $3,000.
That landowner at the end doesn't happen to be here, do they? I don't want to put you on the spot. They're not here. Okay. Removed at the time. We haven't approached them to pay for a solid tile, but I was hoping they would show up to this meeting.
Pay them to have the tree cut down, and then you would have a process of repairing it. But you said a solid tile. Well, how does that affect the water?
Well, there's not a lot of
surface. There's a there's an intake close by, so most of it would go in the intake. It wouldn't have to take a lot of water through the tile, and it'd only be for a 50 to 100 foot stretch. So I don't think that would affect the system much.
The district could bring a nuisance action.
Darren, I'm going to suggest two things. One, research the idea of trenching, since that was something you had not heard before, and see if you can find evidence that something like that could have a positive impact. I don't think that would cost us a lot if we got permission of the landowner to dig a trench between the tile and the tree, if that would work. Otherwise, I would suggest, with approval of Paul and Wayne, that you and I go meet with the landowner and just try to work something out. It should not be everybody else's responsibility to maintain a tree that's impeding the flow of water and causing problems in the basement. So I'd say those two things, if you guys are okay with it.
Sounds good to me. There's a lot to look at if we're using that trench, because right up there in that area, you got a telephone, you got water, you know. So what are you going to run into doing that? That's all I'm getting at. The guy that told me about it said we're laying into the front fit, but there was nothing about the water. And
sure.
Electric pole or whatever.
But Darren will look at all that. I mean, I don't think I'm asking you to do anything excessive in looking into that, am I?
Kent, have you ever heard of that? I'm curious if you've heard
of that. No, I haven't.
Okay.
But I do know that in district tile, we try and keep trees from over top of the tile. And then you said this was in with 15 feet. That's definitely within.
It's a large tree.
Distance that would cause
what
a problem.
What they did 3 years ago was fantastic help to the area. It's really on that second project.
Like I say, district tile isn't a storm sewer. The district tile and city systems, they just don't mesh well, so you don't ever expect it to be perfect in town. We have other towns, larger towns, that deal with the same issue. It's
the thing that really ticked me off was when I built that house, I wanted to run a tile about 10 foot from my lab in the backyard and run it up along and into the ground tile. I talked to one guy and he said, that'd be great. But then another guy told me, he said, you can't, because that's not in the drainage system. I got six spots in the back four, right in.
Okay.
But then I found out that, now I say I'm in. So now my water stands out there in that ditch. I wanted to run a tile intake in that ditch and just run it back over through that one tunnel that's out there.
There is some lots in town that are outside of the district boundary. Maybe you cannot cross a tile, but you can't cross the district boundary.
But we have some lots that would be coming in depending on what action we take.
They've already crossed.
With that.
He's paid it. There's four or five places in the north end of town that they handed, I think it was right in front of the houses up where Ray Robinson first moved.
Okay. Well, they may have been annexed in. This is an old map, so that area may have been annexed in. Ken will probably look at that when he does his reclassification.
Well, I noticed on that Richland 28, it's got some orange right up at the north end.
That would be annexed property as proposed.
Yeah.
It should already be in.
Yep. But if it's not, we want to make sure that anything that is draining into this district is part of the district.
May not be. And what we went by is the current assessment schedules to determine these boundaries.
Well, I've always been told that when you get up to Richland, that's the main road coming east and west. Everything north on the west side is in. And some of the orange I see on that map, it's like everything north of Richland, or north of Richland, on the west side is orange, like it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
We'll take a look at that.
Yep.
And I'll approach the landowner. I was hoping they'd be here, but they're not, so I'll approach them and see if they're open. If they're not open to pay for anything, if really trustees don't have an option to bill a single landlord unless there's a legal action taken in this
Well, let's visit with the landowner. Let's you and I visit with the landowner first, and then we'll see where we're going from there. But have some information on what you think of the trenching, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
All right, that gets us to consider course of action and direct the engineer to proceed with plans and specifications as necessary. Stephen, I'm going to turn to you first and have you make a few comments, because I know you've been researching this pretty thoroughly.
Sure. Welcome, everyone, and I'm Steve Holmes. If you don't know me, I'm the county attorney, and so I've taken a look at some of the issues here, primarily in terms of what the process is going to be if the course of water is changed. I have no personal preference in the engineering choice made. That's not why I'm here. But I did take a look at the cases pertaining to what the responsibilities of the Union Pacific Railroad will be. And the court cases in Iowa are pretty clear about the responsibilities of water, and I break it down like this. I make it easy. If it's underground water, if it's in a tile line, it's the district's responsibility. If it's above ground water, if it's a natural water course, and it crosses a Union Pacific right-of-way through a culvert, the culvert is the Union Pacific's responsibility. The unique situation here is that in one of the options, the idea is to change or bring underground water essentially above ground, even though it's at the same level as the existing tile line, and put a above ground or an open culvert underneath the Union Pacific's. And the question being, will that be an expense for the Union Pacific? There's an additional factor involved, which would be the future maintenance of that culvert. That is, who owns the culvert once it's installed? Will it be the property of the Union Pacific, or does the Union Pacific have to give permission to change the course of water from below ground to above ground? And there really aren't any specific cases for me to find about this specific question. However, in my opinion, if the district does not have a sound engineering basis in order to make this change, I'm thinking that the court is going to look at this as sort of a dodge. They're going to see this as, well, this is very interesting, but it looks to us as though you could have installed a tile line, but you've chosen to replace that and put in a culvert with the idea that the Union Pacific now will have to pay for that or maintenance. And I'm very skeptical that that would be true. Unless there is a very good reason. Now, part of the discussion that occurred earlier by Mr. Rohde, I wasn't perfectly clear about the three existing culverts. There are 4-foot culverts that the Union Pacific has in place. And I wasn't quite clear by the landowners that the water level sits even, and we've had a lot of rain recently too, and that's probably not a good test, but the water level sits at the base of the culvert through, is that correct?
What I was asking was, is if you're going to put this 84 inch, I want to make sure that the bottom of this 84 inch is at the bottom of the tile.
I understood your question, but my question is, at present, do the 3 4-foot culverts remove the surface water?
Yes.
They do. Well, then that would be a very difficult argument, in my opinion, to make that they do not handle the surface water through or across the Union Pacific right-of-way. And that, to me, would be a factor that a court would look at if this one option was attempted. With respect to all of the other options, I really don't have anything about that to comment.
Right, but
Stephen, so what we got right now is we've got these culverts that are intended to handle the surface water that's flowing down. But Mr. Hewitt's property has all kinds of soup where the 22 is flowing under, supposedly flowing under the railroad, where we're not moving water. And now some of that water is flowing, what is supposed to be subsurface water, is now on the surface flowing through some of these culverts in order to get to the other side of the railroad. And so my stance, and maybe I didn't do a good job making this point earlier, we need to do what's right for the district. Forget about who's paying for it. We need to do what's right for the district, and if an 84 under the railroad is what's right for this district, then I'm really comfortable making that case that that's the right thing for the district. And then we'll figure out who pays for it and how it goes from there. But let's focus in on doing what's right. So I think you and I are on exactly the same page. We need to make decisions based on what's right for the district, not based on who might be paying for it, what entity might be paying for it.
Perfect. Now let me comment on what's happening on the surface and whether or not what's happening on the surface is a detriment to the Union Pacific right-of-way, and if the Union Pacific right-of-way would benefit in some fashion. Now, that's another part of this that I'm not very clear about. And I read a letter that was presented to me that was a response to a letter Darren sent today, August 19th, from the Union Pacific, and the Union Pacific is saying, we'd like to see your union.
Let me read that in right now, and then you keep going. So, letter to us today from the Union Pacific. Get through all the pleasantries, and it says, with respect to the 22-inch tile line which crosses under the railroad tracks and is noted as failing, I understand the district is considering replacing this 22-inch line with a new 24-inch line or 84-inch culvert. Before UP can comment on or approve the proposed installation, UP will need more specific detail as to what the district proposes to install. When the district is ready, please forward design plans and specifications for UP to review and comment. Additionally, it is not clear whether the district is proposing to complete the installation itself or ask UP to complete the installation at the district's expense. Please clarify this detail when the district submits its proposed plans. UP is also unclear whether the district proposes to fund the new installation or proposes that UP fund the installation. Please note that following preliminary review, as indicated in Mike Blackley's letter to Darren Moon of last December, UP does not believe that UP has a responsibility to fund the repair of the existing tile line or to install a new tile line or culvert, specifically at a size in excess of what present drainage flow requires at this location. However, UP is ready to have further discussions with you.
Go ahead. Okay, so now let's look at the other side of the matter, and I just want to talk about something that might be important to the Union Pacific, and that is they don't have to. These are the three culverts that are in the picture are theirs. They don't have to, and I don't know whether they can be compelled to replace their culverts. That's their decision. So if the culvert is installed, the question would become, whose culvert is it? And the Union Pacific would be interested to know. For instance, if you could convince them from an engineering standpoint that a larger culvert and an installation of that is appropriate, they might want the district to assume future responsibility for such a culvert if they gave you permission, if they gave the district permission to install it. And that is of some interest to me, because they aren't going to necessarily look at just the initial cost or sharing the cost if it's to their benefit, but they're probably going to want to know who's going to maintain it in the future, I would assume, based on that letter. It was a well-written letter. It's thoughtful. So those are the issues that I see. Another issue, I mean, you talked about annexation, you talked about reclassification, you talked about surveying. The other question that it's not clear to me is exactly where this easement is, and it would appear to me that this ditch is through, or it looks to be, a lot on Union Pacific right-of-way. Now, That, to me, is another interesting issue. And I don't know enough about it because I know that it wasn't clear. So having that resurveyed and what the Union Pacific, what their responsibilities are if that original open ditch is in their, is mostly in their easement area for the railroad. That's an interesting question. And I don't know how to comment on it because I don't know enough about it
this,
at the moment.
This is not part of the open ditch.
This is not.
Our open
Where ditch. Does this water go? So the water comes through the culvert. I assume that's flowing from west to east. So it comes out of these culverts, and now it's flowing south.
Yep.
Where does it hit our drainage district?
This is the east side. There's a waterway that follows. I can bring the plat up, or one of those.
But at some point, it seems like that water has got to be flowing into the existing open ditch.
Yeah, it does. It flows. Zoom in there. It flows. There's a waterway on the east side that kind of bulbs out away from the right of way. Like the map, the picture you saw is up. Up there.
Mr. Hewitt, tell me where I'm looking at right here. So there's the existing tile line, the red, and then where are the three culverts from there?
They're about right where that hand is, where the 34 is. Then that water then flows into that waterway that you can see that angles down, flows down, and then it gets about up a little bit. It gets into the embankment of the railroad, and it's causing some erosion problems there. And just down a little ways is where that tile is actually washed out and made its own extension of the open ditch because of a lot of that surface water that was discussed. A lot of surface water comes from the west side as well as from the east side and flows into that area over land, over the top of this tile and creating its own ditch, as a matter of fact. What is proposed by that open ditch is an improvement rather than having, in my mind, it helps the district. I mean, it's not, in effect, avoid some cost, but the purpose is not to avoid cost, it's to make an improvement to the facilities of this lower portion of the district.
Well, but it seems like it would also positively impact the Union Pacific in that it pulls the entire open ditch out of the Union Pacific right of way.
Absolutely, it does, it would.
And should diminish the use of the three culverts that the Union Pacific is currently responsible for, right? If they're south of where we were talking about putting in an 84-inch culvert.
Yes, and I think it'd be difficult to remove those culverts. It's not our responsibility to remove those culverts.
Right.
So they would likely not be utilized much if that new culvert would be placed.
Well, Mr. Chair, you sound so convincing to me. I just believe that if you sat down with the Union Pacific rep along with Darren and our county attorney, that the three of you would do a very good job of trying to convince them that there is some benefit there. And I would say that that's an option that we need to explore, you know, as we consider whatever action is going to be taken to know exactly what the Union Pacific is going to do. Whether they're going to give us the authority to move ahead, and as county attorney said, and then I assume it would be the responsibility of the district to any maintenance in the future if we're talking about the culvert aspect of it. But I think in many cases it's a case where people fail to really sit down and communicate effectively about future improvement because I would think that they are concerned about maintaining a clear track and the ability of the trains to go through without having to come back in at some point and make some form of repair.
Let's say we do put in an 84-inch culvert. Your question is, Stephen, that once it's in, the question remains, who does it belong to?
Who does it belong to?
Yes.
And wouldn't it be reasonable for Guerrero to say, we don't want it? We don't want you to put that 84-inch culvert under. We want you to go back and put in either 24 or 42-inch tile.
So they don't have to pay.
You maintain it because we don't want that 84-inch culvert under our railroad track that we're responsible for.
Correct. Right. Initially, without any other factors, I would say that would be my advice to the Union Pacific as I was their attorney. However, if there is some benefit being derived from the installation of the 84, if it takes the load off the three existing 4-foot culverts, that is an argument that can be made for the Union Pacific to assume the responsibility for the culvert, even though they don't pay the initial cost of it.
Well, our interests are not divergent here, right? So our interest as Drainage District trustees is to make sure that our ag land is drained. The landowner's interest is to make sure their land is drained. The Union Pacific's interest is going to be they don't want ponding of water on the west side of the tracks, which is the reason those three culverts, I would assume, came into existence to start with, is they have water ponding there. It just seems to me that there's a sweet spot here where we're all benefiting by the same action. And that's what I'd like us to find.
Well, there's two more minor points.
Absolutely.
The Union Pacific's responsibilities with respect to the district tile line, I've been involved in some of these tile line failures before where the Union Pacific notices there's a hole on their grade and they come in and they fill it in with rock. They know what that is caused by. They have no responsibility and are not contributorily negligent by repairing their facility. The last point I would like to just briefly touch upon is the Union Pacific has a number of attorneys in Omaha, and if you want to undertake the Union Pacific and you want this resolved quickly, those two things don't usually go well together, so it will take some time, as Mr. Rohde referred to.
Which is why I want to find that sweet spot where we're all benefiting for as low a cost as possible, but we get to resolution in this thing.
Well, the letter that you have in front of you is encouraging, and if the Union Pacific can be persuaded that this is in their interest, then I think you might be able to strike some middle ground. That's about all I have. Do you have any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Very helpful.
Appreciate it.
So it seems to me, Kent, the right thing for us to consider tonight is forget about who's paying the cost of what's happening. Just talk us through what's the right thing to do for this district, and let's figure out if we can get there. And let's figure out how the landowners feel about what you think is the right thing for this district after having analyzed it.
One, there are issues with the existing open ditch. What's known here? The issues with existing open ditch, it's overgrown with trees. It needs repair and brought to its original shape and design. Okay. There are issues with the tile on the east side of all existing with that lower portion of the tile that are known.
Right.
It's plugged underneath the railroad. It's being washed out on the east side of the railroad, and it's undersized. What is the best way to make these improvements? To me, it's to clean the lower portion of that open ditch, replace that undersized tile with an open ditch of greater capacity, as well as cheaper than if they were to replace it with a 42-inch tile, which would be of equal capacity. Why not make an improvement to that lower portion for the same cost as if you did a repair, which would maintain those facilities in its existing much reduced capacity?
Yeah, I like the idea of getting more for the same amount of money. No question about it. That would trigger automatically the reclassification and the annexation.
Yes. And because it would be an improvement.
Right. Okay. Questions from you guys, and then we're going to open it back up to the landowners if they have questions or comments before we take action.
No.
it's reasonable to assume that an 84-inch tile in an open ditch is going to allow better drainage on the west side of that district.
It's a culvert.
A culvert.
That's important.
It's a culvert in connection with the open ditch. Will take a lot more water from the west side of the west side of the track. Is that correct?
Yes.
Because it's a 22-inch tile right now on the east side of the track.
Yes.
West.
Yeah, running
over. Well, east side too. What's that?
I said it's a plug 22.
Yeah, it's a 22-inch that has rock stuff down in it. Is what it is, right?
Well, I think there's plugs in other spots. And Ray told me the other day, you guys have blowouts on that side in that tile. All right. So it sounds to me. So what we're doing is we're moving toward the drainage district trustees, the three of us, taking some kind of action and giving direction to the engineer to prepare to move ahead. It sounds to me like we're moving toward something that would include an open ditch along the entire west side. We're talking about the West Fork now. Open ditch along the east side of the railroad tracks, with an 84-inch culvert going under the railroad tracks and an additional 100 feet of open ditch. Is that about right?
That's correct, with one addition, that the open ditch would be cleaned in the portion that goes up the East Fork.
The existing open ditch would all be cleaned.
Yes.
Yeah. There. That's the conversation that we've had to this point. No action been taken. It is now your opportunity to comment to us, give us other suggestions if you don't like where it sounds like it's headed, but the floor belongs to you guys as the owners of this district. Comments, questions? Is there anything that's not clear? Yes, sir.
Just my question, how an 84-inch tile is also going to take the flow from the 22-inch, the 84-inch culvert.
Uh-huh.
It's going to take the flow from the 22-inch tile plus the flow from the 3-4-feet tile. And it seems like you're going to have a pinch point there at times.
And I don't think we're talking about, absolutely, and I don't think we're talking about getting rid, first of all, we don't own the culverts, the three culverts.
Right.
That's owned by the Union Civic. And so I'm not suggesting that those would go away. That would be part of our conversation with Union Pacific, which in order to get to a conversation with Union Pacific, we've got to come up with some kind of hard and fast proposal.
Right. I guess that's really size sufficiently to carry both the tile flows and the overland flows without causing harm to your property.
It may only be for 24 to 48 hours, but that can kill soybeans.
Yeah, in certain conditions, yes.
We want to get that water moved under the railroad tracks as rapidly as possible.
Well, somebody's engineering a phenomenal amount of water pressure. You can put in, attach a pump into the current 22-inch tile and pump it through the current culvert. But to try and construct a ditch and push that culvert underneath into a headwater, headlands just full of water, I don't think anybody would want to take the pressure off that site before they undertook construction. Go take a walk there tomorrow. It's a good time to take a walk.
No, I understand.
Come spring, if you're going to do this in 2016, come spring, it's not going to be any different.
Yeah. You're saying to construct that now during, while it's awfully wet, would be difficult? Is that what you're saying?
It'll be wet next year, too.
Even more so. Yeah, likely.
I'd love to see somebody punch through a couple 6 or 8-inch tiles through there, you know, 2-inch tile, take the pressure off.
And there are temporary fixes that could be done, but if we proceed with this project, that's just additional cost.
That's going to be additional cost in trying to construct.
But it could save some construction issues in the future, actually, too, though. So
if you're on the east side going through, once you come through, you're going to relieve a lot of pressure there, aren't you?
Yeah.
So then you may have to back your
Yes, sir.
Can you go to the previous slide that shows it's the same thing, but it's got more of a curve of where it will come out underneath the track? It looks the same.
Yep.
There you go. So my question is, okay, that's a whole lot different than the previous slide. So I guess, is that more realistic of what you think, as to where you think the ditch is going to be located?
No. This is the tile. This is the repair. This shows the lines with the double circles on them.
Okay.
That would be if we replaced the tile, and we would slightly move the location of that tile.
Then go back to the other slide.
The other one showed the ditch.
What do you think would really work?
Yeah.
Oops, sorry. It's the wrong button.
We generally, and again, this is conceptual.
Right.
We would generally follow the right-of-way of the railroad and just keep our top of bank outside of their right-of-way line.
Mm-hmm. Okay, with the way that the water comes down on the surface, I'm talking now, the surface water, the way that blasts across there now,
across.
How are you going to reinforce that where the water would be directly south?
You're talking about the water that comes from the east side?
Correct. No,
yeah.
From the west side. So as it comes through the railroad, it'll be coming straight east.
Yeah.
Slamming into something. I mean, are you able to create enough structure to keep it from eroding and then you end up with this big old thing?
No, yeah, we'd have to armor that with large riprap. We would armor that outside and likely the inside wall as well, inside slope in that area to prevent erosion from occurring.
But the open ditch then would essentially, the dirt would essentially be pushed, that comes out of the ditch would essentially be pushed to the east and kind of almost eliminate that waterway that's there.
Yes. I see that waterway being somewhat eliminated, but that water has to get into the ditch too. So we'd have to have some type of surface drain to allow that water to enter the ditch.
Yeah. Yep. So then, and you're thinking that the bottom of that open ditch is roughly 100 feet away from the right of way of the river? Did I understand that right?
Yep.
Or are you taking 100 foot right away from the railroad to put the ditch in? I guess
the right away for the open ditch would be roughly 100 feet in that area.
But front, it would not encroach upon the railroad's right away. It would be railroad's right away plus 100 feet.
It would be outside of the railroad right away. Is that clear?
But that's closed flow down. When you got to make a right angle turn, that would decrease the capacity.
Somewhat, yeah, but that ditch would, the capacity of that ditch would far exceed the capacity of any tiles that are coming into it.
Did the young lady in the back, you were pointing a little bit, did you kind of get your question answered or? You understand? Okay, great. Didn't want to miss giving you a chance.
Yes, sir.
I deal with tile, and one of the things, like this is kind of a big tile repair. And one of the things you have to do when you repair a tile, you got to find a place for the water to go. Right now, that 22-inch is back up so far. I mean, it's up across S-27. Several years ago when we started to investigate what was going on, we were almost up to the road end with a jet machine trying to figure out where it was plugged. We just kept chasing it down. Every place we dig it up, it would just blow out. It's something I've got to consider for a real
short-term solution is get down there and try to set up a pump and get into the, you know, you just have to get on the back and we'll break it and just pump that, mechanically pump it across the railroad and just, you know, take the pressure.
It's already open. We dug a hole that's close to tile, but it's only going to get to a level that, yeah, you know, the head takes a month to force it out.
You'd have, so, yeah, to get it across. So,
I don't know how long we have to run a pump to get all that out.
That would be having electricity there. I don't know how far electricity would be.
It's a lot of tractor.
No, it's a lot of fuel.
I'll give you right away to.
Well, that's just
the issue is
hard thing to deal with, even if from an engineering standpoint, if you were sent off there to bid on that job, or you're got the engineers and you had to do something like that, one of your first things you have to figure out is how you're going to get that head off. So if you're punching through there with 84 inch pipe, once you get a 22, it's back to 2 miles.
Oh man. Yeah. Well, Ken, that would be something you'd have to look at as you put together any plans if that's where we go. And then you
give you something else to think.
All the easy drainage is done.
Other questions or comments?
Well, the rain you guys get down in this area, it definitely complicates things.
So is it reasonable to assume that the railroad has caused the damage to the 22-inch tile with the traffic of the trains now over the track?
Yeah, but by law, I don't think any of that matters. I mean, I don't think where
that they would bear some of the responsibility of fixing.
Those types of arguments have been made previously, and they've all failed.
The railroad's popular response is that we were here first. And you put the tile through after we were here. So.
Anything else? Any other questions?
My only observation would be is that it seems awful expensive, but I mean, it looks like there could be a lot of benefit. But there's a lot of exploration that needs to happen before we can fully understand what we can do. And then we got to pay for it.
And that, you just hit on what tonight's meeting is about. It's about us getting to the point that we can give some direction so that we can do that full exploration and see where we really are.
Has the route that you've gotten underneath there, or do they have, did they just get rocks when you got in there? Or is that
when you jet into that railroad house, it's just like when you get a boat to move, just like what I did up there. I asked if the hose is swimming or something. And what happened is that they were horrible into that rock and you can't get away. It just didn't work. No, I don't. When that ship comes out between them.
There it is.
Oh, no,
they're just going to. Okay, Kent, if we're moving in a direction of expanding the open ditch along the east side of the railroad tracks, punching through with an 84-inch culvert, and having roughly 100 feet of open ditch on the east side of the railroad tracks, on the west side of the railroad tracks, what kind of direction would you need from this body tonight?
Well, first, I think you need to make sure that if there are any objections to that, you landowners have to make those objections tonight.
If your figures are wrong and it doesn't carry the water, you'll come back and fix it.
You'll make sure that it will carry the amount of water that is needed so you are not damaged. if you object, tonight is the night that you have to make your objection in writing, and it can be simple.
A question, is the railroad
currently have a copy of your assessment?
Of this report?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I mean, it might even help them to come stand on the tracks to look at those sites. Right.
And actually, I'm encouraged by the response we are getting from the railroad. Most of the time, in dealing with other railroads, you can't even get anybody to pick up a phone or answer an email. They were very good in responding to me and the contacts I've made and Darren and what he's done. Well, that's what farmers do, and we just out of the goodness of our heart, we do that and don't charge them. But, So those are positive things. But in answer to your question, Rick, yeah, the next steps then would to be approved. As I understand, the inclination is to approve the option two improvements. To direct me as the engineer to prepare final plans and specifications. You can also direct us to proceed with acquiring district right-of-way and initiating annexation and reclassification of the drainage district.
Sounds like so moved. I don't have to repeat it.
You're all that's gone.
I got one question. Are you strictly talking about the bottom part now then? I mean, you know, what it seemed like we started the man. We was working there. We're just way out of where we're talking about now. Are we back to strictly working on this at the bottom?
Yeah, at this point, what we're talking about is nothing beyond, on the west fork, nothing beyond 100 feet roughly on the west side of the railroad tracks, other than dealing with any issues that we have, just normal repair up the line, but no improvements up the line. And on the east fork, just how much space is that on the east fork that we would be doing a ditch cleanup?
Several hundred feet.
Yeah,
it's a few hundred.
So that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right, well, let's handle these one at a time. And Wayne, so I'll ask you to remake your motion if you're so inclined to approve option two improvements with the understanding that the culvert would be sized appropriately to handle the actual water that we're talking about as you get in and do further exploration.
We'll review that again.
Maybe that's 84, maybe it's not 84, and prepare the plans and specifications. So that's the first thing.
Right.
Your motion on that?
Yep, so move.
I'll second that.
Okay, discussion. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. So option two is approved, and we've requested plans and specifications be drawn up. Now we need to deal with the district right-of-way, the annexation, and the reclassification. Can we do all that at one motion, or do we need to separate those?
There'll be separate hearings on that. It's just to proceed toward.
Proceed, giving the engineer the bring back information.
Do you prefer us to deal with proceeding all in one, or would you prefer us to take them one at a time? Do you got a feeling?
I just wanted to make this clear. Option two is the repair, but that includes
the improvement.
So if your motion should include the possibility that the price of the project is going to perhaps increase by $101,000, depending.
That's shown in the price.
That's
now,
shown
what we
in.
Didn't say is who's paying
who's
for
paying
it.
For
it. It's a $592,000 roughly project.
Right.
And original estimation, which you'll get a more hard and fast estimation when we get all the way through the plans, but it's a $592,000 project. All right, let's just do it one at a time. So, proceed with getting district right away.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Proceed. Annexation of the properties identified as having benefit within the district, but that are not currently within the district.
So moved.
Second. Motion and second. Further discussion. Clinton?
Aye.
Two?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Please proceed with the annexation. And then finally, a reclassification, which I think is required since we're doing this, but we need to go ahead and make the motion.
Yes.
Reclassification of the entire district.
So moved. Second.
Further discussion. Two?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Please proceed with the reclassification. Ken, is there anything else that we need to deal with tonight?
Is there any interest in doing a pre-classification, reclassification for the district?
Did we do that for Marshall Story 1?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that gives landowners an initial look at where things are headed? I think it's important that we do that.
I think so.
Can you walk us through what the next steps are and how involved landowners are in this process?
Yeah. The next steps would be, again, we would prepare final plans and specifications for the option two. You'd also prepare an annexation report by annexing those areas that were located in the red. I would file that report with the board, and there would be a hearing set at least 40 days after. Okay. 40 days is to give everybody opportunities to be aware and notice and digest what is. Same would occur for the right-of-way acquisition. Although the right-of-way, the annexation is just prepared by the engineer myself. The right-of-way is done by two appraisers within the county but outside the drainage district. This interest with landowners, including myself as the engineer, we would set a value of that area that we anticipate of land needed for not only the existing open ditch to bring that to an even 100 foot, but also for that extension of the open ditch to be brought up to where that crosses the right way of the railroad. And that again is filed with the board and then a hearing set for input on that. Next year, of course, nothing will happen this year anymore for construction. We expect the bidding process to take place probably tentatively in late March, early April. Of course, the contract will be awarded with construction occurring next year, sometime between April and October. Completion hearing will be held after that, at which time landowners, we will prepare a report on what we believe is damages to crops and those types of things. Landowners have the opportunity to present other damages that they feel they are entitled to. Again, notice will be sent to those landowners, not within the whole district, but only to those landowners that are the work is occurring. Only those people affected by the construction will be notified of that, that completion. They'll be given opportunity at that time. After that, we will prepare the final reclassification based on the final cost. And again, we prepare that using our GIS information. We present that to appointed commissioners, plus myself as a commissioner, to disinterested landowners within the county. That, again, is held at a public hearing for that commissioner's report. I should say that we typically do that preliminary reclassification report and present that at the bid letting. So at that time, you will know in a general way, based on estimated costs, what's your portion of that cost? Okay.
Tax deductible.
I like the way you think, unfortunately.
So if we move on that timeline, what you guys will all see is the assessment on your 2000, your taxes that would be due September of 2017 is where you would see that.
Yes.
And I think we've got some hurdles to climb to stay on that timeline that you just laid out. And then we'll have to work together to figure out when we're getting into CDUP and have that conversation with them.
Yes. Understand that the Union Pacific is involved as a railroad, and that
brings up a lot of questions, potential delays.
Yeah, I would encourage you to look at that pumping idea. The people who pump manure, you know, pump for miles. And when they're not pumping manure, they go to Missouri and fill farm ponds. They could run their hose clear down to the stream.
Well, there's no question that water can get removed. But in a short period of time, probably, but the day after that, the tile is going to be full.
Why might want to do it closer?
So to me, that pump isn't necessarily a bad idea, but it's going to be a long-term thing. And that in itself is going to be costly, either by fuel, and so electricity out there.
Or not only is the tile full now, our soils are full.
I understand. I feel your pain. That's not good. Yeah, you can have issues with combining.
I'm trying to move soil around there. I would not want to try and move soil around to create a field.
Are you going to be able to get the crop out of the field?
It's tippy toe stuff. You empty the combine out, you empty the grain car out, pick a little bit and get back across the waterway. Hope you don't get stuck. It's seed corn this year, it'll be interesting. If it'll quit raining then I'll apply it.
So, Ken, next time that we all get together, next time we have a public meeting on this, will be roughly when and to discuss what?
I need to finalize this report. Initially, I was thinking the annexation and or right-of-way, but I think we need to be deep into the design, have the design more finalized before we get certainly the right-of-way.
Okay.
To fully determine what that right-of-way is going to be. And I'd like to hold those together combine some of those hearings so we don't, we could push the annexation to the reclassification or do some different things. But I need to look at this.
Are you expecting sometime in the winter?
Yes.
We get together?
Yes.
And is there a way that we can get enough information in a preliminary design that we can go sit down with the UP and just start to talk through some of this with them?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that probably would be the next step, is to get that design finalized and sit down with them, and hopefully they can be understanding and we can move forward.
Yeah, I mean, this whole process gets a lot easier if we have them on board with the concept that we're going with.
So. I would prefer to, hopefully we can get somewhere. I'm not sure who the individual, who's Patrick McGill, is he an attorney?
Yep,
senior counsel.
Senior counsel, real estate law.
They already have their attorney involved.
Yeah. Yep. He told me, I spoke to him on the phone today, and he told me that he would be an appropriate first contact, that for technical questions he would immediately refer us to their engineers and design people.
Yeah, I think it's to our benefit, and Stephen, you help me if I'm missing this, I think it's to our benefit to work as closely with them every step of the way in this and trying to get this thing resolved. Again, I think we can build something here that benefits all parties.
I would agree, and I'd be happy to write a letter to this council and explain that there was a meeting tonight and that we're interested in supplying them with more information, and we will do so when it is available. And and that it may be to our mutual benefit.
Yeah, I would ask if you wouldn't mind doing that, Stephen. I think that would be helpful. And direct them. You'll have this audio up where they could listen to the audio if they wanted to of this meeting. Is that right, Scott?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to direct them there and just put all the cards on the table and let's just see where we can get. Ken, anything else for us to deal with tonight?
I don't believe so.
All right. I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody,
thank
for your evening.
Thank you.
Okay. 9 o'clock tomorrow.
We got that off. 9 o'clock. What's this? 22.